Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinju country. And this is BBM, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have yourself call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. So screening very soon, coming out, July, late July, Shark Cull. And we're going to catch up and have a yarn with the producer and director of Shark Cull, and that's Andre Borrell on the line. Andre, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So your screening of Shark Colors coming out. So tell us about the film and tell us about your environment and the space that you work in, my friend, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So the film is, I guess, half investigative journalism, kind of documentary, and half natural history, nature documentary. So we highlight the beauty of you know, the waters that we share with sharks and dolphins and rays and turtles and all these other beautiful animals. And then we also expose and pull at threads and poke and prod around this Queensland Shark Control Program is the official title from the government. Essentially, it's a program designed to fish and kill sharks in the hopes of dropping their populations, which, again, the hopes are, or the logic was back in 1962 when this was started, is that less sharks would mean less bites. Now, with modern science, we know that's not the case. So, yeah, the film basically lays it all out. The at times pretty graphic truth of what goes on there, 500 metres off our beaches,
yes,
with some of this culling equipment. And, yeah, educates and informs viewers who may not know. They just would see some bright boys and get told there's shark nets out there that keep you safe.
So the shark documentary is a bit of a educator and a tool for communication about protecting these species.
Yeah, absolutely. It is about showing what's really going on, showing the importance of sharks to our ecosystem. You know, there's a really beautiful scene around the Great Barrier Reef and the importance of sharks and coral reef ecosystems. So, yeah, it's got a bit of everything. It's some science around why sharks are important. It's the beauty, just these beautiful shots of our country, and then then some of the nasty stuff that this government program does that they try and keep quiet, and hopefully we can bring to light.
Well, we're talking about putting all cards on the table is what I'm picking up here, Andre. And when we're talking about protecting human beings as such, but we don't want an extinction of sharks, do we?
Well, exactly right. So the ocean would be in a very, 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 very bad way without sharks. They're needed. They keep everything in check. They keep all the populations of everything healthy and vibrant. They're the doctors of the reef. The way that one of our interview guests describes it in the film. So yeah, and look, some of these sharks that this shark control program targets are protected by the Environmental Protection Act. They're critically endangered. You know, these are sharks which we should be protecting, not killing for a false sense of security.
Sure, exactly. And some of the tools that they're using regarding culling sharks are virtually doing more damage than good, you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. They're just fishing devices. That's all they are. Some people think shark net and they picture a barrier out there that keeps sharks away from the beach.
Yes.
Not the case. They don't even go to the bottom. They're only 180 metres long, which, you know, on a 3-kilometre long beach, what's that going to do?
Exactly.
They are not there to keep sharks away from people. All they're going to do, and what they're designed to do, is trap, tangle, or in the case of a drumline, hook a shark, and that shark will die. It'll either die slowly and painfully, or the contractor whose job it is to come and check out the nets and check out the drumlines, if they find a live shark and it's one of the target species, which is 19 of, which is far too many, it's a joke, they will shoot it or stab it in the head, and no more sharks, no ocean.
Andre, how would you look at communication to the people in regarding a balance act, so to speak, whereas we as human beings like to get out there, dive, snorkel, surf, yeah, but we are in their domain, aren't we?
Yeah, look there's a few positions you can take around this. One is you enter their environment, it's at your own risk. You either agree with that and do it, or stay out of the water. That's one approach. Yep. The other approach, which probably our politicians are going to resonate more with because they need to cover their backsides,
yep,
is we do need to do something. In that case, let's do something that A, works, unlike the current program,
yep,
and B, is non-lethal. There's a way to keep people safe from sharks without killing them.
Exactly.
So, yeah, look. One way to look at it is just don't go in the water if you don't want to get bitten. But politically, that's not a realistic position that they're probably ever going to take, those blokes down in Parliament House. And so we advocate for them to just modernise, stop using the same stuff you dreamt up in 1962. And instead of that, why don't you use something that's a little bit more becoming of the 21st century?
Sure. And what's your education on regarding shark? And they're out there just looking for a feed. And if a human leg is there, then they'll take the human leg. But explain that
there,
part
mate,
of things.
Lost
you. Yeah, you there, Andre? Yeah, Andre?
Yep.
Sorry. Can you hear me okay?
I can now.
Sorry, Andre. I was just saying, so in regard to sharks, they're virtually just living their life. They're in their domain, and if there's a human leg there, they'll eat the human leg. But, they're just living their life. So we're in their domain, aren't we?
Exactly right. They're just doing their thing. They're doing what nature has programmed them to do, which is swim around and look for a feed. And occasionally they make a mistake and they think that's us. Usually they realise they're stuffed up and they piss off pretty quickly.
Sure.
But occasionally they stuff up, just like all of us do. So to go and kill them for that out of
protection,
just,
so to speak, for human beings.
Make people feel a bit better.
Yes.
Makes no sense.
No sense, exactly. The other thing is what I'm thinking of, if you've got a swimming area where people go swim on a beach, pay the extra money, have helicopters out there to overlook the water to see if there's any shark and communicate with the lifeguard, so to speak. That'd be a better way, would it not?
Yeah, I mean, actually, you can do it even cheaper than a helicopter with drones these days. You know, drones are incredible.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
They got good flight times, they got great visibility. You only need a couple of days training for the lifesaver or whoever it is that's going to be flying it. That's one of the alternatives that we show in the film.
Yep.
There's a number of others, such as swimming enclosures, much like stinger nets,
yep,
but for sharks. There's a number of them, but you're 100% right. Spotting them, be it via helicopter or be it via drone,
yes,
is fantastic. Good way to see them. You notify the beach, clear the beach, no one's going to get bit. It's miles better than a net or a hook 500 metres offshore that you hope might catch something, maybe.
Well, Andre, I don't know what the cost would be, but if it costs like $2-5 million a year to have helicopters flying so humans can have activities in the water and have enjoyment, that rather than have an extinction of sharks.
We actually costed it out. We sat down and looked at every single... it is not featured in the film. It's something we did after the film was finished. We looked at every single beach that has shark nets or drum lines at it in Queensland.
Yep.
At the moment, that cost them $8 million to run, approximately. We think with non-lethal technology, you can run it for about $4 million a year. There's an upfront cost. You've got to buy all your drones and you've got to install all your barriers. But after that, you can run it for around $4 million a year instead of $8 million.
Yeah, beautiful.
Which is what their current program costs them. Yeah.
Well, work smarter, not harder, you know what I mean? And I always say life is simple, but people complicated, yep?
Yeah, exactly right. I don't know why. I don't know why they can't see the logic, but maybe what was the best idea in 1962 isn't still the best idea in 2021.
Yeah, point taken. So there it is. Keep your eyes and ears open for In Cinemas, end of July, Invoice Shark Cull. And Andre, thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you and your team, your family. Stay safe and we'll yarn soon.
Thank you so much. Great to chat. Thank you.
Bye, Andre.
Bye.
A deadly yarn there, producer and director of Invoy, and that's Shark Cull, coming out in films theatres near you. And do check it out. It's a fantastic tool in regarding education on this beautiful species of shark. Instead of shark culling, it's a way of protecting these beautiful animals. They're getting very close to extinction if we're not very careful, which will do a lot of damage to the marine world, so to speak. Have your say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. That deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Yarn up with the bully one here, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country. That's BBM 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray call, let's have a yarn, you mob. Too deadly.
Signal. G'day, you mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor, Tim Trendy, Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country, BBM 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. And to all your daily mob out there, happy NAIDOC, wherever you are, celebrating strong and deadly. I hope you're having a great celebration. And yarn up strong here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Right, we're going to catch up a yarn now and have a yarn with some deadly sisters. Dr. Fatima has come to join us, and also we have Emily Dempsey and Stacey Corporal, as well as Dr. Seaman, and we're talking about sleep coaches. Dr. Fatima, very good morning. Good morning, all ladies. How are we?
Good.
Fantastic.
Good,
yeah, good, good, good. Sound like a choir there. Good. Too deadly. Dr. Fatima, just give us a bit of background regarding Indigenous Australian youth in Mount Isa and talking about upskilling Aboriginal youth workers and community to become sleep coaches. Tell us about the... Or give us a background there, please, Dr. Fatima.
Thanks, Trevor. So we know that sleep affects our physical and mental health, and we know that the Indigenous youth and adults have a disproportionately higher rate of poor sleep, and that affects their chances of getting a mental health problem or chronic condition. But unfortunately, none of the program that we have available, they focus on the traditional and cultural knowledge of Indigenous communities, and this is a huge gap. So we thought we need to develop something that can be used in Indigenous communities and that celebrate the richness of Indigenous cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But we also realized that we need to train, upskill local people so that they can deliver the program and they bring with themselves the knowledge of the community, local cultural protocols and context.
Yes.
So that's why we thought we need to invest in local people. And that's how Emily and Stacey got involved in the program. So we are training and upskilling them to become Australia's first ever sleep coaches in Indigenous communities. And they are going through a range of training to effectively deliver their program.
Yeah, look, fantastic. And I think young Emily and Stacey will agree. And Dr. Fatima, you're working in that space. Nothing beats black on black. And when you've got our mob yarning, talking to our mob, look, it's a great fit. It's a nice bridge builder. You have the right information coming out and you've got the right protocol in regarding communication. So, look, I think that's a fantastic move. And we've got Emily Dempsey and Stacey Corporal there with you. Is that right? Good morning, girls.
Hello, good morning. Good morning.
Start with you, Emily. How were you introduced to the program, sister? Before we start, let's just start first, starting with you. Emily, who your mob were you from?
So I'm from the Kalkadoon region with cultural links, extensive cultural and family links to the Gungalida traditional lands in Burketown and Gregory, and Waliyawa traditional lands in Dajara.
All right, too deadly. And also, Stacey, who your mob were you from?
My mob is the Wani, and that's in the Gulf region.
Well, exactly. And that's my mob, Wani Gungalida. So we are connected, girls. That means I can borrow money off you. Too deadly, eh? You all went silent. Shut up. Okay, I don't want any money. Let's talk about Emily. Let's talk about how you were introduced to the program, sister.
So previously, before working with young people ahead and JCU in this research program, I was a youth support officer in community, and the general manager, Alvin, approached me to have this opportunity to become a sleep coach for the young people of Mount Isa.
Too deadly. And can you tell us about your personal experience in sleep health?
Before starting the training and education with Simeon, didn't know much about sleep and how much it affected our everyday health and everything we do. But to be able to have education for my, not for just myself, but to help the community as well, because we don't realise how much sleep health actually affects your everyday.
So how can this program help our young ones?
So just around the education,
I think having them educated and have that understanding that sleep is important, and not getting enough sleep, what comes with that. So, just the education around it and knowledge.
Exactly. Fantastic. Yeah. Got that. Stacey, with yourself, how were you introduced to the program, sis?
Same again, like Emily. I was introduced to this program by the general manager, Alvin, and then we linked up with Dr. Fatima, who's the director, and, and she explained more about the project and what it was about.
How long you been in training, girls?
Well, I started my role in November last year.
Okay.
Yeah, and then Emily come in January.
In January, all right. And so what sort of work have you been doing in regarding to become a sleep coach?
Well, we've been, we're in the process of co-designing, so we have monthly meetings with our community elders and quarterly with the youth in the community, as well as service providers.
Yep.
And we do the sessions with Dr. Samin on, she's our sleep coach, so she educates us with the sleeping information side of things.
And we've got Dr. Samin there with you, haven't we, Stacey?
Yeah, yep.
Dr. Samin, if I can bring you into the conversation, thank you very much. Helping to train up the sleep coaches, project coordinator. So tell us some sort of information or some sort of pathway in how to train sleep coaches.
Thank you for asking me, Trev. I'm supporting Emily and Stacey in their journey to become sleep coaches.
Mm-hmm.
My role is to facilitate Emily and Stacey's training and upskilling activities, and equip them with the appropriate tools for effectively promoting sleep health in the community.
Yes.
So I offer them fortnightly sessions about basic architecture of sleep, and I also unpack and reinforce their knowledge on sleep health and its implications. The sessions provide opportunity for two-way learning and are playing a big role in improving Emily and Stacey's knowledge, as well as my understanding of traditional and cultural knowledge on health and well-being.
So you students back and forth, their students learning to become sleep coach because you'd be a student learning the cultural way. So it's a good fit, a bridge back and forth, yes?
Yes, it's like cross-learning method. I learn about the tradition and culture.
Yes.
They get to learn about sleep health.
Exactly.
And sleep disorders, its implications, how to diagnose them, sleep hygiene, and later we have planned to introduce cognitive brain therapy for insomnia.
So, Dr. Samin, you've got an accent there. Who your mob were you from, would you like to ask?
Yeah, sure. I'm originally from Pakistan, but I'm in Australia for last 7 years.
Okay, last 7 years after two wet seasons, you're local, so welcome to our country, sister. Dr. Fatima, who your mob were you from?
I'm originally from India, but I've been in Mount Isa for over 9 years. So I
9 years? Well, you desert rat now, girl. You're one of the mob.
Yeah, I am one of them, I think. I've got a lot of love and respect for community members. It's
good.
Really rewarding. And for MNN Spaces training, with, I think it is important to highlight that we are not offering a program around just sleep health as well.
Yes.
So although the program for MNN Spaces upskilling is centered around what is sleep health, providing them with some foundational level knowledge through SAMIN and advanced certificate from the University of Western Australia, but they're also getting training on drug and alcohol issues,
yes,
youth mental health issues, domestic violence, and then with our meeting with community elders, they're getting a lot of information on the traditional indigenous knowledge on sleep health, the dreaming and totems and animal spirit and all those things which are not really captured in anywhere in the current literature. So it's about sleep, but it's about other factors as well that affect the sleep of young people. So it's very holistic, very inclusive, and
yes,
culturally appropriate, and celebrates the richness of indigenous culture.
Yes, fantastic. Back to you, Emily. Can you tell us what sort of things are out there that are depriving our mob from sleep?
So we find the biggest thing is the, you know, drug and alcohol use. So a lot of our young people are using drugs and alcohol.
Which is bad for your health anyway, but then, like you said, it then affects your sleeping pattern. And if you're not sleeping, then that's we're talking about a downward spiral then, aren't we?
Yeah, because then we've also got, you know, our young people who aren't, they don't understand the mental health, they think,
yes,
they're mental in the head. So we're trying to also educate them as well that mental health isn't, doesn't mean you're mental in the head. There's,
yeah,
a lot to it. So just thinking, you know, with our young people, they don't have that cultural connection either.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
Connecting back to culture as well, and they do their stuff, everyday life.
Which is a good tool in helping our mob get back on track. Culture is very important. Stacey, over to your sister in regards to some of the stuff that you're learning as a sleep coach. So we're talking about presentations. We're talking about talking to people, especially our young ones, especially our mob. So there's a bit of, how you say, public speaking going on. Is that fair to say? And are you enjoying that?
Yeah, it's going good. Getting out there and having them young, it is the best thing.
No, that's too deadly.
And, yeah,
breaking the barriers for,
yep,
our young people too. You know, what we find too, our mob, they don't like going to hospitals or doctors or anything until it's too late. Or,
yeah, exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
So, starting that education and knowledge from a younger age with their health.
Yeah, fantastic. Dr. Fatima, I'll finish off with you in regards to the work that you're doing. Do you work closely with our First Nation Health Organisation there in Mount Isa?
Oh, yes, I do. So we have Gigi Healing there. They are supporting the project.
Yes.
And then we are also offering a sleep clinic in Mount Isa. So
mm-hmm.
they would join us, hopefully, for that project as well. But we have a long and successful history of working in collaboration with Gigi Healing and other,
yes,
indigenous health and well-being services. So this project is an outcome of our collaborative approach to improve the health and well-being of community members. We can't progress solo. We need to involve everyone. And they are all supporting their services in the community who are supporting, who have joined the advisory group, and they we meet with them quarterly. And they are suggesting that in addition to offering this program, we need to offer something which we are calling as a safe sleeping space for young children.
Yes.
So if there's, you know, issues at the family or neighborhood, they can call the service and they can go to that space and get a good night's sleep. And offering some opportunities to get a nap, and the school is also on the table. So
good.
We're looking at different things and how can we support young people in getting good night's sleep and improving their mental and physical health.
Yeah, beautiful. Look, a very important space you're all working in. My deadly sister's there, Emily Stacey, thank you very much. Congratulations. Enjoy that journey, becoming sleep coaches. Dr. Seaman, thank you very much for your input. And Dr. Fatima, fantastic. Please do keep in touch here with First Nation Media, and good yarni with you on National Talk Black. Happy NAIDOC, you mob. Too deadly.
Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank
take
you.
Care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. a deadly yarn there with four deadly sisters there, and talking about sleep coaches, and Emily Dempsey and Stacey Corporal are being trained as sleep coaches with Dr. Seaman there, project coordinator, helping to train the sleep coaches, and with Dr. Fatima Yukwuk, and they come from Indigenous Australian Youth and Manizer, and a program called Sleep Upskilling those young ones there. Fantastic. Have your say, yarn up strong. Don't fall asleep, your mob. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. That deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn up with the baldy one here, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns as BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM, and on your dingy country. And we go across the nation thanks to the NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray call. Let's have a yarn. Too deadly.
Around singing and dancing with my people throughout the night, me and the brothers still going strong. I hear a voice of my father
Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
A very good morning, you Delhi mob. Welcome back to your Delhi program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Digi country. That's BBM 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabo calls on that Delhi number, 1-800-422-416. Give the Murray call. Let's have a yarn, you mob. Two Delhi. Speaking of Murray, going to catch up with Delhi Murray now. Renee Woods, and he's the only First Nation man on the Murray-Darling Basin authority. Got the brother on the line. Rene, good morning, brother. How are you?
Good morning, brother. I'm very good. Chilly, but very good.
Yeah, Cole, thank you very much for coming to the program, brother. Before we start, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
Yeah, my mob's from the lower Murrumbidgee and lower Lachlan area, the Narri people.
Yes.
We're wetland people. And, born and raised on the banks of the Murrumbidgee River down there and spent all my time in the water and on the land down there.
Yeah, beautiful, brother. Now, you're the first First Nation man on the Marlin-Darling Basin Authority, but the first one ever. Look, a long time between drinks, partner pump, but, you know, there should have been a First Nation person front line, you know, front and centre from the get-go, I feel, brother.
Oh, yeah, look, there's been plenty of people pushing for a First Nations member on the Murray-Darling Basin Authority for a number of years now, since its inception, and that come to fruition at the end of last year in December. Good. When they appointed the first person, myself, into that role to help First Nations water voices be heard at the top level of water governance in the Murray-Darling Basin.
And look at the Murray-Darling Basin. Look, it's a big array of river, you know, a big river it is, and, you know, and leads to other rivers as well. Very important to the people on the land, especially TOs. And there should be a First Nation person on this authority, yes?
That's right, and it's myself in that role now, advocating, making sure First Nations voices are heard at the top level of water governance, as I said, and also helping to open up opportunities in water valleys across the basin for traditional owners to have a say in water management.
Yes.
And working with basin states and local water holders to have a better outcome for First Nations mob in their water valleys, which is highly significant for all of our people across the basin.
Well, when you look at the Marlin-Darling, the Murray-Darling Basin Authority has been operating for a while without a First Nation person there. So the conversation or black voices or black opinion, so to speak, or education is not at the table, but now it can be.
That's right. And to the MDBA's credit, in the past, they have engaged with the Murray Lower Darling Rivers Indigenous Nation and also the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nation.
Okay.
Nations, which between both organisations have some 40 plus First Nation groups as members of their organisations. And the MDBA used to engage and still do engage with those nation groups through those two peak bodies to make sure their voices are incorporated into water management. And it also, the Basin Plan has allowed for Basin states to engage with nation groups around water objectives and some of their cultural values, if they wish to share the cultural values with the basin states. But look, we're all in it together, and the authority needs to take on the views of First Nations people, and I'm making sure that that's heard at every discussion I'm in at the authority.
Tell us the process, Rene, for you to be on board. Was it put out there to all the traditional owners in the area and someone represented it, and then they had like a democracy vote? Or how did it come about, brother, with you being selected?
The process set out a EOI process that went far and wide across the basin. There was a recruitment process ran from there where there was an interview process, and then the basin state ministers have their input to it, and then the water minister of the day makes the final decision on the appointment.
And Rene Woods came to the table, brother.
Yeah, it was a long process. It
yes.
took about 18 months to,
all right.
to get through.
Okay.
But yeah, look, we're there now. We've got a Good. Voice through myself, and hopefully we can incorporate more people into the water space.
Exactly.
And having First Nations people ownership of land and water.
Yes.
And to be able to heal country.
Yes.
Through those mechanisms.
Well, when you're talking water, we're talking about the most precious commodity on planet Earth, outside air, you know, and food. You're talking about farmers at the table. You're talking about mining people at the table, recreation, traditional owners, and it's got to be a table for all the above to be at the table, to have their say, and to guide it into the future for our children.
That's right, and if we're not at the table as First Nations people, those other stakeholders have the opportunity to discuss the water. And now that we're at the table, and getting our fair say in water management, to leave behind and continue 65,000 plus years of knowledge transfer to a younger generation, and having First Nations people having their input into water management makes a better water management regime across Australia, not just the basin, that brings, as I said, 60,000 people, 60,000 years of water management to the table, not just 233 since.
Well, we are professionals in that field, 60,000 years, as you mentioned, brother, this can be templated across the country and communication of all First Nations people at the table, anything to do with water.
That's right, and increasingly our participation of our aunties and our women in the water sector as well.
Yes.
NAIDOC theme a few years ago, because of her we can.
Yes, exactly.
Mother Earth is screaming out for help. Right across Australia, and by having our women involved more will help us be better water managers into the future. Our First Nations women are a lot of the water holders, the water knowledge holders in the space.
And look, happy NAIDOC to you, my brother. And there's the theme regarding Heal Country, and water is a part of country. So it's come to fruition, and it's meant to be. Our ancestors are speaking strong in spirit with us, aren't they?
Oh, definitely. Our spirit and our ancestors are guiding us today through the work that we're all doing in the water space and the land. That's it's all a holistic approach with us.
Yes.
We don't separate land and water or air or sky.
All one.
It's all one, and I think that bringing that holistic approach to water management in Australia, and in particularly the basin, is making us look at a different aspect of water. With those other stakeholders as well. They're learning from us.
Exactly.
We're learning from them in this space.
Exactly, brother. Now, with the MDBA, how often do you guys meet?
Yeah, we meet quite regularly. It's once a month.
Yep.
Throughout the year, plus other meetings where possible, as well as engagement with all stakeholders across the basin. So I do get around to have yarns with a lot of different mobs across the basin. The enjoyment I get out of it is learning from people out there on the ground and hearing their stories and their aspirations of water on their country. And if I can help by having that seat at the top of the tree, I'll do that. And I think that's the benefit of someone in that space at the governance level.
Yes,
to be able to translate those voices that we're hearing through engagement and making sure they're at the table and heard if they're not currently.
I'm thinking there would have been a bit of excitement at your first meeting of the MDBA, and there would have been an introduction as such, introducing you to the authority. That would have been a great feeling and a good buzz in the air.
Oh, look, my fellow board members of the MDBA have all got very good expertise and knowledge of water, the water space, as well as engagement with First Nations mob and understanding where they're coming from, and I was quietly surprised with the amount of support around the MDBA table and their staff. Staff in the MDBA do an amazing job.
Beautiful.
And that they a lot of the work doesn't get seen
of
what they're actually doing
for
First Nations mob. And I think that's something I'm hoping I can help communicate out to.
Well, you're doing that right now on national radio, brother. So a big shout out to that team, and it is a team effort and part of the punt, but high tide rises all ships, eh?
That's it, my brother.
Look, good yarn with you. Congratulations on your new appointment there as a First Nation man on the Murray-Darling Basin Authority. To Deli, my brother, you yarn for the mob and yarn for the mob at that table. So congratulations. We'll be in touch and keep doing what you're doing. Happy NAIDOC, my cuss.
Cheers, brother. Happy NAIDOC to all the listeners out there, and stay safe and well, and help continue the great work you're doing to Heal Country.
To Deli, brother. Take care, bro.
Bye.
Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there, Rene Woods, and he's a Nara Nara man, and he's now the only first-time First Nation man on the Murray-Darling Basin Authority, acronym MDBA. Fantastic, and he's a voice, being the voice for First Nation people in that area, and to all the traditional owners, you've got a voice at the table. And look, long time waiting, it should have been from the day dot, but hey, say, we understand that, black people understand that, when it happens, but we just keep banging the drum until it happens. Happy NAIDOC, you mob. I add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, that deadly number, 1-800-422-416, Heal Country, too deadly. Yeah.
day is dawning and the grey people rise. There's healthy little children with happy laughing eyes. Hunters at the ready, they know how it feels to be chasing kangaroo or catching lots of eels. Now it's hard, so hard to live. You just took so much from us, yet we had so much more to give. And Gregory, don't you go away. It's written in the land so many things you have to say. And Gregory, don't you ever die. There's so much for us to learn together, you and I. We men gathering other food, all good things to eat, native fruit and vegetables to serve up with the meat, gathered up in baskets made by skillful hands, beautiful strong women, mothers like the man. Now it's hard, she feels the pain. Oh, you just took so much from her, and you're doing it again. Oh, Gregory, don't you go away. It's written in the land so many things you have to say. And Gregory, don't you ever die. There's so much for us to learn together, you and I. Paintings tell the story of how the world began. The sun in all its glory, and a woman and a man. Elders teaching children about their tribal lore. Dancers dance and singers sing of what they did and saw. But now it's hard to sing and dance. We could have shown you many things if we only had the chance. Now, Gregory, don't you go away. It's written in the land so many things you have to say. And Gregory, don't you ever die. There's so much for us to learn together, you and I. Didgeridoos are droning and the children stop their play. It's time for all to gather round and celebrate the day. Campfire slowly burning and the crib people sleep, protected by their dreaming
that they will always keep burning with heart, so hard to dream. I hope one day it all comes back, if you all know what I mean. Now, Corey, Corey, don't you go away. It's written in the land so many things you have to say. And Corey, Corey, don't you ever die. There's so much for us to learn together, you and I. Oh, Corey, Corey, don't you go away. It's written in the land, so many things you have to say. And Corey, Corey, don't you ever die. There's so much for us to learn together, you and I.
On your mob, it's me, Bush Tucker Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
I'm asking you, woman, if it's all right to be with you tonight. I'm waiting. Yes or no? Let's take a walk down by the river. Peace and quiet is what we need. My love for you, baby, will save me when times are hard. I've been working all through the day. I've been thinking about your special way. My love for you, baby, will save me